is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect, presented by Bosky Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, Restoration. Please call for service at 444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. I don't know if you were locally grown here, but you're definitely a local guy. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with us this afternoon, giving us our every 3-4 week update on politics. Hi, Paul.
Hey, doing well. And no, I didn't grow up here, but my mom did, and yeah. I have a lot of family here, and it sucked me back in. So here I am, and trying to get some freedom in the state of New Mexico, some freedom with our enchantment.
Hey, let's talk a little bit. Just tell us a little bit about, you have a bipartisan vision for the Rio Grande Foundation. You, most of the things you talk about have to do with the economy. Mm-hmm. And jobs and things going on with New Mexico in that realm, but you also are addressing all kinds of political issues.
Yeah, well, right now, of course, the COVID-19 situation, how we respond to that as people, as a government, those are critical questions for our state, and we have some thoughts based not on tremendous medical knowledge, but just looking at the policies in place and trying to come up with some consistency to them. Other than that, we do focus on the economy writ large, New Mexico's economy as a state, local economy here in Albuquerque, Bernalillo County, et cetera, and education issues as well, which have really come back to the forefront. They're always at the forefront for folks because, you know, education is very important, both in the economy. We want an educated, trained workforce. We want, improved educational outcomes. And right now, with all these changes and switcheroos and everything happening in the education system, we want to also have, some options for parents who are going to face tremendous challenges this fall.
Paul, you also are having a conversation, really, that's a public conversation. And one of the things you espouse is openness in government. And yeah. So you have been critical of what the state of New Mexico is doing. In fact, right before the show, we talked about the fact that the governor's having another press conference this afternoon. It usually happens about half an hour or an hour and a half after our show is over at 2. And it's interesting how that keeps happening because the last couple times nothing much has changed, but you're going to give us an update on what's happening. But the criticism has really been that the conversation she's having with her experts and the people that testify to us and the public every time she has a press conference, the conversation they're having prior to that is not public.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's very difficult in these days, and I'm somebody who goes up to Santa Fe to the legislature and testifies and talks to folks. That none of that kind of collaboration is happening, and we know what happens in Santa Fe. We don't always agree with it. It's not always well thought out public policy, but at least people have their say, feel like they've been heard, and you have an impact, and sometimes you really can have an impact on the policies in place when you have that legislative process. Right now we have one person rule. It truly is a dictatorship in the sense that, you know, one person has controlled all aspects of New Mexico government, with the exception of the special session for like a week there. But she's been in charge now, getting close to 5 months. And I don't think that's a healthy situation for state New Mexico, any state, national government. I mean, could you imagine if President Trump said, Congress, just go home, stay home. I'll tell you when I need you, and we're going to keep passing laws and changing everything. And a week goes by and he has a new conference to talk about all the new changes, whether it's stay in your home or this, that, or the other. I think people would be marching in the streets again. And we've had a lot of that. And but it's not the way government's supposed to work. We know from Civics 101.
Article in the Albuquerque Journal this morning criticizing the governor for spending a bunch of disaster relief money without getting anybody in the legislature involved. And that's coming, some of the criticism is coming from the Democrats.
Yeah, there has been a lot of criticism. And our major criticism has been that We had CARES Act funding, that's federal stimulus money, the original one, that she diverted away from the K-12 education system. We also saw in today's paper how the K-12 APS alone is expecting a shortfall of $14.5 million. Now, it's tough for me to wrap my head around how APS comes to that number, simply because there are so many fluid things going on in our education system. Yes, we know that there's going to be additional buses, PPE, you know, people wearing masks, teachers, kids, the whole nine yards, enforcement of that, cleaning of the classrooms. But on the other hand, I suspect that I'm not going to be the only one, or my family's not going to be the only one pulling their kids out of APS, and that you're going to have a far smaller student population. Then you have the virtual and the hybrid. There are so many moving parts here, and that's one of the reasons we made that decision to homeschool, is because it's so all over the place. And we hope that APS does a better job for the sake of all the kids in the classrooms or in the APS, still the system this fall, better job than they did last spring, because quite frankly, it wasn't up to snuff. Now, it was a very quick reaction attempt to try to get the school year, continued and go to a close, but, it's got to be better, this year, hopefully.
And we're going to cover a little bit more detail about that, some of the choices you're making for your own children a little later in the program. But let's talk about just a general COVID-19 update. There seems like there's some good news. The amount of transmission is going down pretty significantly.
There's a lot of good news. Well, first and foremost, let's talk about last week's press conference. The governor didn't talk about it, but one of our big criticisms has been that she's treating beer different from wine. Now, they're both alcoholic beverages, and I'm actually talking about breweries versus wineries. But breweries have been open, patios 25%, for some time, months now. And wineries were left unopened and unable to participate in that opening process. Made no sense. There's no scientific difference between wine and a beer when it comes to the spread of COVID-19. But the other one that she did liberalize, if you will, was studio fitness programs, Pilates, yoga studios. Those are finally able to be open. Now, I haven't seen any real evidence one way or the other as to whether working out on a weight bench or doing whatever other gym activities is safer or less safe than sitting presumably in some kind of, you know, spread out fashion, doing Pilates or yoga, because those aren't things you want to be in too close a contact. You're stretching and you're kind of out on the floor. I just can't imagine that is a dangerous proposition. So anyway, she did allow those. She didn't mention them in her press conference last week, which is weird. But the spread is the big one. You're right. The spread numbers are way down, and that's the number that she's been looking at. We haven't been as big of a fan of those particular data, because we think the issue of people getting exposed to it and dying, that's the real issue. Now, that is a lagging indicator. Spread is a forward-looking indicator, you know, more rapid response there. But, you know, if the 20-somethings and the healthy young people go out and get it, it's not a bad thing for them, very, very significant majority of the time, like over 99%. And that builds herd immunity. And really what we're talking about and trying to avoid is people dying, not necessarily people catching this virus.
Well, I did notice in the Native American communities, there's some data that the rate of transmission is really slowing down, which is just an amazing piece of news. But I want to go back to something you said earlier about some of the businesses that seem to not be treated equally. Well, one, mm-hmm. we had a guest yesterday, Stan Hubbard, who is the owner of the Outpost Ice Arena.
Right.
And Stan has his club programs. He's been categorized as an athletic facility. Well, where better? He cannot have any public skating. Where better could you social distance than in his massive, beautifully remodeled ice arena? You don't have to be within 20 feet of anybody and you could be skating. And I'm not sure how COVID lives on the ice, but I can't imagine that it lives too long. So the bottom line is he can have club sports, he can have, you know, hockey teams and things practice, but he can't have public skating. And that's a head scratcher. And Stan's one of those guys that, hey, we're going to honor what the governor says, but we can't figure out why she's saying it.
Yeah, that is another one of them that just made no sense. And you have people who I know would love to get out there. I actually took my kids out skating back in December, right before the Christmas holiday. So it was a great opportunity to get some exercise and enjoy time on the ice, just going around in big circles. Yeah, you're definitely not too close to people in general. Set aside the ice factor for a second. Roller rinks are another one, too. They're in the same vein. Typically, people are going around at a pretty good clip, and you kind of want a six-foot distance just to make sure you don't get bowled over by somebody, whether it's ice skates, and those will hurt if you get hit by one, roller skating the same way. And, yeah, the fact that we have people who can't or are unwilling to go out and exercise, and what are the health ramifications of that, those are not being, to my knowledge, implemented in these decision-making processes. And that's the basic problem we've had from day one is let's come up with broad parameters, and if businesses can comply with them, check up on them, by all means have government inspectors come in and check up to make sure you're complying, then they should be able to reopen and serve their customers, not have arbitrary closings like what you're talking about.
I'm going to go off script a little bit here, Paul, and ask you a question about fairness. Is there an idea, do you think, that she has, the governor's office and those in her leadership, that it's only fair to treat everybody the same? In my opinion, it's more fair for our community to get as many people open for business safely as you can,
mm-hmm.
and publicize and have a discussion about everybody who's closed and what it's going to take to get them open, but do it in the public so we all know what's going on. Mm-hmm. That seems more fair.
Yeah, well, you're opening up a big can of worms there. And I'll just say this. It's pretty simple. The government mentality, and this tends to be Democrats especially, but some Republicans, they get into government and they think that suddenly government has all the answers. And that is not the way that America was designed. It wasn't the way that public policies that have succeeded in this country and around the globe have been created. It's always a bottom-up approach. It's kind of the British common law scenario. And that's been one of the great benefits of America, is having that common law bottom-up. Let's experiment. Let's find out what works. And then that becomes the legal framework. We're having a top-down approach here in New Mexico, and it's not uncommon. There's a lot of other states. To your point, though, back to the education system, one of the things I would like to see is, you know, we're homeschooling. That's our option. That's kind of withdrawing from the system. But there are obviously some number, what is it? I don't know, 20, 30, 40% of teachers who would like to teach in the classroom who would be okay with that. There are obviously parents who would like to teach or have their kids taught in a classroom. Why can't willing teachers and willing students get into the classrooms in a social distancing fashion? Because you know your numbers are going to be way down anyway, 50% maybe, depends, and have those students do what they want to do, and then have the other kids and the teachers who don't want to be in the classroom, who want to do the virtual thing, they do the virtual thing. That's exactly what you're talking about. That's people coming to compromises and decisions based on different interests and risk tolerances and all those things. And it goes to every facet of our economy. Now, it's difficult in a big bureaucracy like APS, but that's why Rio Grande Foundation, it's not that the people at APS are ill-intentioned or they're trying to do what's not best for our children or hurt our kids. It's because bureaucracies don't have creative solutions. It comes from the bottom up. And that's just one of many that I can think of relating to the COVID-19 that we need to consider.
We've got another 45 minutes with Paul Gessing. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul spends his life, even when he's on vacation with his family, researching things and texting and blogging. And we're going to talk more about political news and the economy in New Mexico. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do you have an old clunker or a good running vehicle? Donate to Joy Junction. It can help bring hope to the homeless. If it's in good condition, great. If not, no problem. Running not required. We'll take it. Just contact us and we'll take care of the rest, even towing. Just call 505-217-9586. Your vehicle donation will help us provide housing for Albuquerque's homeless families. Joy Junction, bringing hope to the homeless. Won't you help? Here's Joy Junction CEO, Elma Reynolds.
Joy Junction has been serving homeless families, men and women, for more than 33 years now. And it's a dream come true for our late founder, Jeremy Reynolds, to have a new additional space to give more dignity and privacy to those who come to our doors. But we need your help. Your generous donation means hope to somebody, and we are here to be that hope.
For more information, go to joyjunction.org. Be that hope. Go to joyjunction.org.
Serving you and your family day and night. Call Bosky when you want it done right. For heating and cooling, plumbing and more. 24/7 we'll be at your door.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosky Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
For quality service like a breath of fresh air. Call Bosky and we'll be.
To a patient with High Desert Hospice, something as simple as a caring touch, a smile, a prayer, or even just physical presence can bring comfort beyond measure.
I was unsure about volunteering, but when I met my first patient, I knew I had made the right decision. The patients and families are so grateful. You can't help but feel good.
Discover just how easy and fulfilling volunteering with High Desert Hospice can be. Go to highdeserthospice.care. That's highdeserthospice.care. And click on volunteer.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
You say yes, I say no. You say stop, but I say go, go, go.
The Beatles kind of summarizing our political environment. You say yes, I say no. Rio Grande Foundation with Paul Gessing this afternoon here on ABQ Connect. Paul, you guys do a lot of things to hold people accountable that are serving in government. Tell us a little bit about the Rio Grande Foundation's participation in feedback on our city councilor who's now been ordered to pay back some money to the city.
Yeah, a few months ago, right before the COVID-19 outbreak back in February, Clarissa Pena, who's a city councilor, it broke that she had gone on a trip theoretically for public business to Philadelphia. And most people, you and I, would get on an airplane and fly up there by ourselves and do our business and then come back to Albuquerque. Pena, however, apparently doesn't like to fly. So got on a train. Okay. That's fine. It's a long trip, but got the train tickets, didn't just get the train tickets for her, got her whole family set up with a sleeping car, which that raises the price as well, and took the train up to Philadelphia, came down to Washington, D.C., had some meetings with Congress people we've got up there in Washington, and long story short, stayed in some very fancy hotels, cost a lot more money for the taxpayers of the city than it would otherwise likely have costed, especially for to fly up there and whatnot. So this story broke. To credit the state auditor, Brian Colon got in on it and did some analysis and digging, and the counselor is going to pay or has paid $4,000 back to the city. $4,000 isn't a big thing in the grand scheme of things of the city budget. I totally understand that. But you also have to have policies in place for public officials that can't just take their entire family on vacation on the taxpayer dime. And it's an important symbolic and important issue for the honesty and integrity of our political leaders to not engage in that kind of activity. So, a bit of a good resolution there, and hopefully they come up with better systems of controls so that this kind of thing does not happen again.
Is a control just a policy or something just like that? So there has to be some kind of statement made about how you do these things. I mean, on the surface, you know, hey, I have to go to Philadelphia. It might be nice for my family to go with me, but it seems like you might want to take extreme caution in booking flights or booking train rides and do all of that separately. You know, have a credit card where your family's on one and then you have the city expenses over here.
Exactly.
And that would be, seems simple enough.
Yeah, and every business or company has nuances and differences in policies. Some of them are very strict. Some of them are more reasonable. You know, we at the Rio Grande Foundation, if I got a trip, I was supposed to be in Chicago in a few weeks for a big annual conference. There's a 50-state network of think tanks all over the country, and we were all going to do our annual meeting up in Chicago. Well, that was canceled a long time ago. You know, I did grow up in Cincinnati, Ohio, so I was going to make a plan to visit Chicago and then head down to Cincinnati. And, of course, I wouldn't charge the foundation for that ticket to get from Chicago down to Cincinnati. And, you know, of course, everything went kerflooey with the COVID-19. Still making the trip back
but
to
Paul,
visit family.
This accountability is not just necessary in politics. This is necessary
Absolutely.
For any corporation.
Right.
I know churches are under the same kind of scrutiny. When you have people that are giving donations and they want them to go to a specific thing, you can't, take jaunts around the world and those kind of things without getting some approvals and getting those things taken care of through appropriate channels.
Yeah, and it was just a particularly egregious example. It was something that never should have been approved or never should have happened at the city. Hopefully they come up with better policies and controls to make sure that that kind of thing does not happen again. That if, you know, Councilor Paney or somebody else needs to go on a trip that they want to take their significant other or children on, that they pay for those tickets and meals and all the kinds of things that they would otherwise be expected to do if they did it themselves.
Paul, I want to go back to the governor's press conference again. Again, one happening this afternoon after our show's over, but we're going to talk about last week. The reason I think this is such a focus for all of us is it affects the churches. It affects all the businesses, the restaurants, the corporations, the gyms, the breweries, mm-hmm. the wineries, you name it. It affects all of us. And I think that the governor had a little time last week where she was complaining a little bit about the lack of federal stimulus being available to our citizens. Why is extending the federal stimulus package such a problem?
Well, a quick aside, you know, as we said, she is meeting, doing another press conference today. And if folks are inclined to tune in and check this out, I would encourage them to do so. It's at 3:00, I believe. And look for discussion of the reduced spread. Look for discussion of the positives, because a lot of political leaders in some of these states, and I would say our governors right there, have been very eager to say, you know, we're doing a bad job, we're not getting the things done, we're not wearing our masks, we're not social distancing. But when good news comes out, they don't want to acknowledge it or talk about it. And I just hope, I mean, we're talking about a decline in new cases from the end of June, or July, I'm sorry, July like 29th, I think we had 318 or so cases. We're around 200 new cases now. So we've seen a drop of about a third in just a few weeks. And so will she put, you know, new relevant policies up to maybe give people a little break and open
the
economy
up? Well, I noticed also the recoveries almost doubled in about the same time frame.
Right. So there's a lot of good news happening on the virus itself. Now, talking about the economic situation, you know, we had the CARES Act. That was a $2.1 trillion package. Unprecedented. I mean, you know, even during 2008, 2009, that economic crisis, it was $780 billion. I know billion is a lot of money still, but $2.1 trillion is incredible. And now, the Democrats, at least their package, the HEROES Act, is $3.1 trillion. We're talking about a federal government that's over $26.5 trillion in the red. And I think the problem we're facing here is that you have states and our governor right among them who they're, for whatever reason, and I know the virus is important, but they are locking down and not focusing much on where can we open? What can we do? What's innovative? They're locking down. And then they say, well, Uncle Sam, they turn around literally and say, Uncle Sam, bail us out. And so far we've seen that bailout, but it's not the rich Uncle Sam isn't a thing. It's Uncle Sam's been, taking out loans and, you know, has debt up to his eyeballs. And now you're asking for $3.1 trillion is an insane amount of money. Now the Republicans are basically going along with the idea of another stimulus, at least in Washington. The most of the, you know, the Republicans who control the Senate and President Trump, there's wide differences in terms of specifically how and what that those entail. And our hope is that they can't come to an agreement. Generally, though, when there is agreement on spending money in Washington, they find a way to spend that money. But I think we're living on borrowed time and borrowed money as a state and as a nation. If we keep piling up this kind of debt at this rate, it is totally unsustainable and we just can't do it forever. And that partially gets to states have to suffer the consequences, meaning that if they shut themselves down, they don't have money to pay the bills. They can't come crawling to Uncle Sam for a bailout. And I think we need to live up to that reality at some point that we get, just can't borrow that money indefinitely.
And Paul, I don't think people understand where the money comes from the federal government. They just think there's this endless pool that's, you know, the pool never empties.
Well, there is a theory out there. It is a bogus economic theory called modern monetary theory. And they basically say as long as we're the world's basic currency, you know, you can go all over the world and people will take dollars because it's that reserve currency. You can't do that with Mexican pesos or Canadian dollars. And that is a true thing. But one of the ways that we've become the world's currency is because the U.S. dollar has stood for something and it's stable and got all these positive attributes. A very good way to convince the Chinese or the Brazilians or some other country that the U.S. dollar is not what they want to hold, not what they want to invest in, is to keep piling up debt. And there's, you know, we've seen the examples in the textbooks. Of course, there's Weimar Germany. There's Venezuela. There's Zimbabwe, where you can go find a trillion Zimbabwe dollar note and it's worth like a penny or something. It's, you don't want to lose the integrity of your currency. That is a very, very bad situation. And piling up debt, I mean, it's literally been like $1 trillion a month for this COVID-19 situation, if you average it out. So it's way outside the realm of anything we've seen in the past in this country, and it has to stop.
Paul, I will say in my own observation, watching the three television networks, the major networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, I'm seeing media reports that say Republicans are blocking the renewal of the stimulus package.
Yep.
That's what I hear. They don't want to give you an extra $600 a month. They want to give you $200. So the whole focus has been politicized on one party blocking this. And I think that's the part that the Republicans are having trouble with, particularly because we're in an election year. But I imagine a corporate board meeting where the president of the company, maybe it's the Rio Grande Foundation with your 400 employees, where you make an announcement, look, we've got XYZ expenses. We're going to have to reduce everybody's pay by 10%. And by the way, we'll have to be taking out money from your checks to pay ourselves back for, you know, something that we're having to invest in. Well, that's not going to fly in any corporation. Why does it fly with Americans?
Well, so far we haven't had to suffer the consequences of the kind of debt defaults and situations that we've seen in these other countries. I just mentioned Venezuela, you know, Weimar Germany. And, you know, we don't know when people will lose that confidence in the U.S. dollar. But you just can't, it's unsustainable. Ben Stein's father, Herb Stein, had the famous economic maxim, which is that things that cannot go on forever won't go on forever. And the kind of debt we've had is simply unsustainable and can't go on forever. If I were the Republicans, if I were President Trump, I would have said, all right, we've done the CARES Act. This is it. You know, like a parent with a teenager who has insatiable demands for new cars and new things that they want to put on their dad's or mom's dime. You say, we did the CARES Act. You know, we understand the shutdown was a tough situation. $2.1 trillion is going to have to hold you. It's still a lot of money. And we are not going to have another bailout. So you figure it out, states. You make policies relating to the virus that you can deal with and, you know, balance your budgets. And, you know, if you have to cut them, whatever it means, you've got to make those decisions. Just because Washington kind of sort of has a printing press, they can go into debt, whereas states have a balanced budget amendment. That doesn't mean that you can just spend unlimited sums of money out of Washington, D.C. So, you know, the Republicans especially are not the best at putting together coherent messages based on basic principles, whether it's mathematical ones like what we're talking about or, you know, other principles. And there's a variety of reasons for that. But you have to put that message out first before you get stuck behind the eight ball of saying, oh, those are the naughty guys who don't want to give you the extra $600 in unemployment. Now, is that unemployment benefit a good idea? It's great for people who don't have jobs, who either can't or don't want to find a job right now, but it's terrible for employers who want to find people to work in some of those jobs. And there's plenty of, you know, fast food joints and other places looking for people to work who cannot hire them right now because it pays more to stay home for a lot of these folks. And that's not good policy either.
Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation in studio with us this afternoon. When we come back, we're going to talk about some positive news on grocery receipts, which I think all of us were expecting to absolutely plummet, and it hasn't. So stay with us. We'll be back after these messages.
This is A Fresh Thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
There's more good news in this little book than any of all of the rest of the Apostle Paul's writing. He also uses that exact phrase, good news, or the Greek is euangelion, or you've probably grown up hearing that as the gospel. Paul uses that 8 times, which makes this the book dedicated to good news. Why? Because Paul was focused on the bright side of his situation, as bleak as it was, for sure worse than what we're walking through. And so let's pick apart this joy, this responsibility that he carried of joy, as we talk about the 4 ingredients that in this passage made his joy so complete. The first is, I see in Paul an unshakable gratitude. An unshakable gratitude. How do we choose to tap into joy? First of all, we realize that we have the option of an unshakable gratitude.
For more fresh thoughts, go to levilusco.com.
New Mexico, we love it, but it's no secret our state is left behind in some very vital social issues. Child hunger, single parents, and abortion, to name a few. The people of God can and must take action. That's what Mission New Mexico is all about at KNKT and Star 88, this month featuring the CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque. Here's their executive director, Stephanie Luke.
We do share Christ with our clients. We let them know their value, and if they don't know their value, they're not going to value that little life inside of them.
That's Stephanie Luke from the CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque, this month's Mission New Mexico. Loving our neighbors in practical and productive ways is Christianity 101. At KNKT and Star 88, we are a megaphone for New Mexico needs as we provide a clear call to action. Find out more about supporting the CareNet Pregnancy Centers of Albuquerque by clicking the Mission New Mexico link at knkt.com or star88.fm.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Steve Ryman pulling out some music for ABQ Connect. What do you think, Paul?
Oh, I like it. She's going for the classic hits. I generally enjoy those. And You know, when a band like Guns N' Roses starts to appear on the local classic rock station, it makes me feel old.
Yeah. But
that's not obviously GNR. There's that's definitely classic rock going back to the 60s or 70s. I don't know exactly the era.
The point is well taken, though. Come on, people, now let's get together.
Exactly.
That's what we need to do. We need to work together. And hey, Democrats have a different opinion than the Republicans. So what? Let's get in the room. Let's work things out. Let's have a discussion. Let's go, hit some golf balls or shoot some hoops or do something afterwards, of course, mm-hmm. with proper social distancing in mind. Hey, good news about New Mexico grocery receipts, Paul. I think we talked about the fact that we thought this would really plummet, but it hasn't.
Yeah, normally the grocery receipts tax is the most directly related to economic activity of any form of taxation that we have as a state. You know, it's in other states, it's mostly called just a sales tax. Here, it's gross receipts tax, and we've talked fairly frequently about the reforms that need to be made with it. But what we've seen in recent media reports and from the state is that despite the massive shutdowns that we've experienced over the last 5 months, gross receipts tax revenues have remained relatively strong. Now, we just talked about the federal stimulus package and $2.1 trillion, and I think that's a huge factor there. You know, there obviously are whole industries, businesses that are shutting down and going away, and there's a lot of challenges with them. But what's happening is you're seeing other businesses and industries, and I would say that probably your home improvement sector is the single most booming, healthy area of our economy maybe that they've ever seen in that area. Because, you know, right now, when you're stuck at home, people are saying, well, that swimming pool that I was thinking about suddenly became the only possible way that I'll get my kids in a pool. You make that decision and go ahead and do that. And you're also seeing, homeschooling required some reformation of our house in terms of getting areas of the house changed over to accommodate that. So we spend a fair amount of money moving furniture, changing things around. And I lost my home office at home, so I had a home office. I also had a downtown office. Now we're fully embedded in the downtown office as an organization, and that home office is now the homeschool office. So we've got changes going on as Americans adapt to the reality and being at home more. But that doesn't mean that this is going to continue. So this is not a blank check for the governor or others to keep the economy in lockdown, because you're still seeing tremendous economic pain. And, you know, I'll throw one thing out there, and I forget if we're supposed to talk about it or not. Some news comes so fast these days, but that Marathon refinery out in Gallup, mm-hmm. 29,000 barrels of oil that they take in there, and it's gone. It's a couple hundred jobs. It's gross receipts. It's property taxes. It's all the things that make an economy go. And we know Gallup is one of the most economically depressed areas of New Mexico. They've lost a coal-fired power plant and a petroleum refinery in just the last 6 months. And those are...
Now, where did the refinery go? Why was that shut down?
Well, they shut it down when COVID kicked off. If you look at charts, and you can go find them online, you could find charts of Americans' gasoline consumption this year, for example. And you saw just a massive drop right away, as, you know, March and April really were the biggest times for that. But consumption hasn't recovered yet. It's still down, I don't remember, 10-20%. In most places around the country. And that's just gasoline. We're not talking about jet fuel. Jet fuel, you know, how many flights are happening? It's a lot less. So generally speaking, petroleum consumption and production are way down. So Marathon made the decision. I think they said they had 16 refineries across the country. They closed that one in Gallup and one in California that were their two highest costs. Now, they didn't say what the cost factors were at the Gallup facility, but regardless, there's a lot of jobs throughout our economy that are also going away. So just because you have this GRT situation, we're seeing a significant change in our economy that I don't know is sustainable, especially given I think a lot of it's built on that economic stimulus coming out of Washington, D.C. right now.
You mentioned the Marathon refinery, but you also included in that, without naming it, the San Juan coal-fired generating station.
Actually, this is a different coal-fired plant. There's a, I forget the name. It begins with E, and it's a Spanish word. But
it's in New Mexico?
It was out in Gallup, yeah. San Juan Generating Station is a different issue, and I think we were planning on
That's what I want to talk about now, because that's kind of an interesting situation.
Escalante is the name.
Escalante.
Yes.
See, I didn't even know there was another coal-fired generating
station. Yeah, it wasn't owned by PNM. Of course, we're here in the PNM service area, but it was a different, I want to say Tri-State or one of the other utilities that's involved in New Mexico, and it was a coal-fired power plant based out in Gallup. But yeah, the big news this week that we definitely wanted to talk about was the San Juan Generating Station and changes happening there. Now the issue has been kicked over to the PRC. It's a very powerful regulated.
Now PNM is no longer operating the generating station, right? Or is that?
I think they're on the way out. They will pull out. I believe it's June of 2022. That's when that whole thing ends. So, the legislature adopted a law in 2019, which the Rio Grande Foundation vociferously disagreed with, called the Energy Transition Act. That requires 50% renewables on the grid, PNM, and others by 2030. So we're talking less than 10 years. Then they said we are going to be 100% non CO2 emitting. And I think that was by 2040 or 2045, one of the two. But, what the PNM or PRC, then Public Regulation Commission, which is an elected body, representatives across the state, there's talk of changing that to an administrative body under the governor, but that's on the ballot this fall. So right now they're elected, just like your legislature, small number of them. There's five of them. And they, decided to require PNM to go 100% renewable. So there's a difference between 100% carbon-free and 100% renewable. Carbon-free could mean nuclear. Well, PNM gets a lot of nuclear from Palo Verde in Arizona, but the PRC said, no, you're going 100% renewable. There's going to be large battery installations. Basically, we've not seen this done on any large scale. So it is going to put New Mexico on the cutting, or some would say the bleeding edge, of electricity reform. PNM expressed serious concerns in the hearings about reliability. Are they going to be able to maintain a reliable electric grid? Because when the wind doesn't blow, the sun doesn't shine, you don't get that kind of electricity coming out of those sources. And you wind up, the batteries are there, but we've had weeks where the sun really doesn't shine very often in parts of New Mexico. Is this going to be something that we all just light candles and try to do the best we can? I don't know. But that's what the PRC made the decision. I also think it's going to have serious cost implications and cost increases on the backs of New Mexico ratepayers. But it's all going to take time to play out, is what's going on.
Anytime somebody mentions battery to me, it's interesting to me. I mean, batteries in our cell phones, they develop a memory and they don't work well. Every time a new cell phone comes out, it's not supposed to have a memory. But your battery, by the time you've used it for 2 or 3 years, doesn't work well. And I understand the components in batteries are pretty much heavy metals and pollutants that don't react well, and they don't really have a recycling plan for. So, I know nuclear energy and all of those discussions have been made, but that still seems, Paul, like it's the most reliable and less invasive to the environment.
Yeah, I think nuclear does have great potential, and it's green in the sense that there's no carbon emissions. Yeah, you got to deal with the waste, but we have successfully dealt with that. There's opportunities to do that. Even in southeastern New Mexico, we could be kind of a closed loop of nuclear in New Mexico because we have uranium here. We could do the plants very easily, and then we could do the disposal in a safe way down at this facility that they're looking at between Carlsbad and Hobbs, New Mexico.
What's ever happened to the one in Carlsbad?
That's called WIP, Waste Isolation Pilot Project. That was to deal with basically if somebody's working with nuclear material at Los Alamos, they have a glove or something like that. That's considered low-level nuclear waste, and I'm just using that as an example. Mm-hmm. But that goes to WIP. WIP had some safety issues, nothing like no nuclear wind or no nuclear material got out of the facility, but they were suffering from some challenges down there, and they reopened. So they're going strong, but there's a facility that's been under development, and it was just in the paper again, like a week or so ago, the governor saying, no, we don't want this facility. The locals want this facility. So another back to the governor. We can't quite leave her. Why is somebody 5 hours away in Santa Fe making policies for a region that definitely wants to see that economic activity happen in their area? And what they're doing is, I think it's a higher step up. It's a step up in terms of the level of contamination or whatnot from what WIP has. But the geological features, the lack of population, all those things, the desire by the local community. I mean, you know, most nuclear facilities, you talk about that and people, you know, if you did that in New York City or something, people would lose their minds. I mean, we've already seen them lose their minds, but they'd really, really lose their minds then. But in Southeast New Mexico, we have this experience with nuclear plants and nuclear materials. And so people are saying, yeah, let's do it. We need the jobs. We want the economic growth. And the governor's there saying, no, we don't want it. It's a decision that's being made by a federal agency called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC. And, we'll see what happens. But, it's unfortunate we have these public officials that are saying, no, take your jobs, take your investment. Get out of here. Go elsewhere.
Yeah, and I really think that has to include the populace needs to be involved, and the representatives need to be involved in those discussions. So Paul Gessing is our guest this afternoon. We have one more segment with Paul. And Paul is, in addition to being the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, he's also a dad with two school-aged children. So we're going to talk about homeschooling and some of the considerations he and his family have had in considering whether to send their children back to school. So stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Years ago, there was a slogan, life is short, play hard. King Solomon's slogan was, I'm in charge, pray hard. Listen to Skip Heitzig.
Solomon is feeling the weight, the leadership weight of his dad's kingdom upon his shoulders. And he realizes, look, I need wisdom to know how to handle these people and make decisions.
And God granted him two important things.
God gave him a vast breadth of understanding, an unusual amount of understanding and wisdom. So Solomon ruled with both his head and his heart.
Access Skip's entire teaching library at connectwithskip.com.
If you just rule with your head, if you've got all brains but no heart, the Bible says knowledge puffs up. Love builds up. It edifies.
Add the Connect with Skip Heitzig Alexa skill to your Amazon device.
A balanced person has both brains and heart. Paul said, if I have all knowledge, but I have not love, I am nothing.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
Let's start with ourselves and acknowledge very likely that in your business or your nonprofit or whatever, you very likely have a title. What's your title? You might be the brand manager, the sales director, the missions pastor, the marketing manager. You might be the CEO. You might be the CIO, the chief information officer. Maybe in my world, you're the SP, you're the senior pastor, you're the YP, you're the youth pastor, you're the NIWWLL. The new intern who won't last long. I don't know what your title is, but the big first thought, and we're going to look at six in the next two episodes. Number one, I want to encourage you to expand your title to include CPS. You're not just the CFO or the CIO. You're also the CPS. Since you're the leader, you're the CPS. What does that stand for? You are a chief problem solver. That's what you are.
That was Craig Groeschel on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. We're trying to play a little music thing for you there. Didn't work out quite as smoothly as we'd like, but thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thank you for listening to the program. We appreciate it very much. Paul Gessing is a regular contributor to our show, and want to direct everybody, as you're preparing for the upcoming election, you really want to go to the RioGrandeFoundation.org and take a look at all the things they have to say. They've got a little rating and ranking for our legislators in the state of New Mexico. They talk about, they call it the Freedom Index. It's a nice way to see how your representatives in your community are voting. It's a bipartisan site. Paul's equally getting on accountability for Republicans and Democrats. So I think you'll enjoy it. Paul, I've enjoyed it. I mean, I go on the site and I look at different issues, and you are constantly blogging. Tell us your blog site.
Errorsofenchantment.com. And so we write up different things, current events that are going on there. As you mentioned, the Freedom Index, we rate based on votes. So it's purely as the votes happen, what we give in terms of scores to each of those bills, and then the legislators that vote on them on the floor. Right now, we're distributing on social media, Facebook and Twitter, and you can follow us on there at Rio Grande FNDN is our Twitter handle. And you can look at who is taking a pledge not to raise taxes in 2021. We very much are concerned that the legislature, when they convene, because some of this federal stimulus money may be going away and whatnot, by 2021, we could be looking at more job-killing tax increases in Santa Fe. And we don't want that. We want people who are going up there to try to do what they can with what they have in Santa Fe. So there's a lot of information available. Rio Grande Foundation, we keep busy. I know Jim knows that. And, we try to hold these guys accountable and bring some liberty and freedom to the state of New Mexico.
And you really have some interesting articles in your newsletter. People can sign up for that for free.
Yep.
And you send that out via email, and I love getting those. They're like getting a little briefing. I'm embarrassed to say that before I took this position here, I didn't know any of this information. I didn't know how the political system worked. And every day, almost every day, and I've been here in this position a year and a couple months, and I'm hearing so many things that I never could have imagined happened in the state of New Mexico.
Yeah, well, having spent myself 8 years or so up in Washington, D.C., doing public policy, and that was essentially after I graduated with my political science degree from college. And you get up to Washington and you kind of see how the big boys do it. And it's a very interesting experience. I definitely recommend young people who are in their, 18, 19, 20-year-old age range to check out an internship in Washington, D.C., especially if they're interested in politics or just being in one of the most interesting cities in the entire world, and just checking out a different place. But eventually, I realized that if you want to actually do something, being at the state level, dealing with state and local policies, seeing the people every day, you go to Washington and you don't really see the people who are affected by the policies all that often. Sure, some of them will come to your office, they'll make the trip, but not many out of your population. Whether it's Heinrich or Udall or Deb Holland or however many, how many New Mexicans come and visit them in a week? It might be 5, 10, 15, whatever it is. Here, you live, you walk, you work, commute among all the people that the policies you're working on impact. So you get very immediate feedback and you get a lot more, I think, genuine understanding of the issues at play. And how they're affecting people than Washington, D.C.
And again, I'm not asking you to agree with this next statement. I want to spend the last couple minutes talking about homeschooling and the decisions you've made for your family. But you've mentioned in the past the state spent a bunch of money on Spaceport America and didn't see much of a return on that. But I used that information, and I got a hold of Alice Carruth, who's the Director of Public Relations for the Spaceport Authority for New Mexico. They manage that facility. And she really thinks that there's a lot of really good activity going on. We may actually see people traveling to space fairly soon.
That's been the mantra coming out of Spaceport America, and I hope that they are right. Just to be very clear, not that you don't know this, but your listeners, you know, should know that we never said that we want the spaceport to not succeed. Now that it's built, we hope it works out. However, this is not the proper role of government. Government should focus on clear presence issues, infrastructure, things that need to be put into place, not speculatively building a spaceport. And it will be over a decade from completion to potential first flight. And that's if it happens. So that's just a basic function of how government works or doesn't work. Whether it happens or not, and whether they're able to make not just space flight with Virgin Galactic's equipment and everything, an effective and reasonable way for people to get into space and do tourism, but also whether they can make a profit and actually make this worthwhile for New Mexico. Because if you get one tourist ship launched and then you need 3 months, 6 months to recover and get the next one going, that's not going to work for them, and it's not really going to do much for us. So we hope. I know that the paper, the Albuquerque Journal, had an article in it talking about, well, next year now, 2021. They said this year was the year earlier. And, you know, I know COVID-19, et cetera, but you're going into space. It's not like the most prohibitive environment in the world for traveling and dealing with COVID-19. So anyway, we'll see how they do. I just think it was a mistake at the outset to make that massive investment of taxpayer dollars.
And I agree with you. I hope that they're really successful. And we're going to have Alice on the Carruth on the program, you know, in a few more weeks to talk about some more updates and those kind of things. So
good.
Stay tuned here to ABQ Connect. But Paul, in our last segment, we're going to talk about our last COVID subject, and that is, do you go to school with young children? I have 5 children. They're all grown, and I am just thanking the Lord that I do not have small children right now.
Well, I'm thanking the Lord that my 4-year-old's preschool is open. It's going to be adjusted. It's different, but it is a normal-ish environment for a 4-year-old child, because at 4 years old or preschool level, it's really not about school. It's about going and socially interacting and learning a little bit from your friends and classmates, and it's going to work out for her, I think, and I hope. Now we have an 8 and a 10-year-old, and they go to elementary school. There's challenges for sure, but my family is able to make it work. My mom was a school teacher. My wife, her business is a little bit down in the dumps right now. Commercial office furniture isn't that great because, real estate is and people are moving out of business environment type places as opposed to buying new office spaces across the country and in New Mexico. So she's got some time, and then I will take up my opportunity to teach my kids about civics and history and those kinds of things. It is something that we're going to be writing, discussing, talking about, just the experience of doing something totally outside the box. I mean, my kids were in traditional public schools. We contemplated going in to private schools, various options, religious, non-religious, whatever. And before this whole thing broke out, it was because it's a lot of money when you're talking about 2-3 kids and every year. And, it just piles up. And so we figured we would travel and do things like the Yellowstone trip that I talked to you about a few weeks ago. It's been about a month now since we got back from Yellowstone. And we're able to do those kinds of things in part because we don't have the tuition payments that we're paying. But my kids are into it. They're excited. And, we're in a much better position than, unfortunately, a lot of families. And I wish more families had that option and without too much pain. But it's going to be a challenge for everybody.
Paul, I'm going to drag you back in here in about 3 weeks. Hope you'll join us again on ABQ Connect.
Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.